party tonight.
What?
TV party tonight.
Oh,
we got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes,
to our favorite shows.
Oh, my circuit.
Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
Scary Dog.
Larson at Blurnsville.
Futurama.
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattlage and Broadcasting premiere podcast TV party tonight. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattlage. And tonight, our favorite show is AEW Blood and Guts, a special episode of AEW Dynamite. It aired May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Revenge of the 5th is what some people call it, after May the 4th. Get it? Those are all Star Wars references. It took place at Daly's Place in Jacksonville, as all of their shows have lately, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And they had about 1,500 people in attendance. Here to discuss this with me tonight is one of the podsmen, Mr. Chris Bailey. How do you do, sir?
Howdy do. I just wanted to give you a quick update. Kenny Omega has just won the Grocery Store Heavyweight Championship. It has just happened about 5 minutes ago here at my work. He's got it all. He's got all the belts, Mark. All the belts. Grocery store championship and all. How about that?
So the rumor mill is that, and we'll just talk about this at the top of the show, and then we'll jump right into Blood and Guts. I promise I'm not doing Greg the Hammer Valentine, but this is worth discussing.
Fair enough.
So Daniel Bryan's contract expired with the WWE. And correct, the rumor has it that he is going to do like a brief tour of all the best matches wherever he can find them. Like, I don't think he's going to sign anywhere long-term commitments, but I think like he might sign for a match or two in AEW with like Kenny Omega. He might go to New Japan, stuff like that, and then call it a career. The other rumor is kind of attached to all of that is that he'll do his sort of tour of all the best matches, and then he'll go back to the WWE as a trainer in Orlando. What do you think?
I definitely think that Bryan is technically somewhat done at the moment. So I know a lot of folks think that he's just going to end up on Monday Night Raw or NXT, you know, in a couple weeks. I don't think that's the case. I think he's going to do the Cody Rhodes Goodwill Tour. So remember when Cody got let go from WWE and he did, you know, he hit New Japan, he hit Ring of Honor, he did, you know, he did all the best of series that he could possibly do. He was NWA, you name it. Cody Rhodes was there getting his name out, and I think that's going to be the same thing. And I think the best of with Daniel Bryan, getting him to show up on a house show, Ring of Honor, and all this stuff, is absolutely how you rebuild that package and make him, you know, a certifiable superstar once again. Because I know that, you know, he's expressed his disappointment not being able to, you know, fulfill his dream matches. You know, he's still got gas in the tank, Mark. And I think it would be a shame not to get those, you know, those last few dream matches out of the way with Bryan. And I'm super excited to see where this happens. Hopefully he just doesn't sign with All Elite and, you know, call it a night. I think that sprinkling a little bit of Bryan around the wrestling world is going to be just what the doctor ordered.
Do you think there's any chance he ends up re-signing with the WWE and then just goes to Raw or something?
Listen, money talks all the time, my friend. And I think that the very inkling that Daniel Bryan shows up on a house show or the tease of, you know, one of the competition, I think the money is going to start flying again. But, you know, he is a bad one. He's not the guy that you want to see plastered on a Daniel Bryan is, or Daniel Bryanson is All Elite. You know what I mean? That's not what you want. So I think anything to avoid that would be advisable on this point, because this guy is, you know, he's money. He may not be money what WWE considers money. You know, they're the Roman Reigns and the Rock type of, you know, type of people. He's not their prototype for printing cash, but I guarantee on that independent scene and in places like AEW, Ring of Honor, he's ticket sales, man. He's box office.
I want to jump ahead to one of the segments on tonight's Blood and Guts show. They had Kenny Omega face off with Orange Cassidy, and let me just say, I was only like half paying attention to this. I may have dozed off towards the end, but what came out of it, and the whole reason I'm bringing this up now, is that Orange Cassidy is going to wrestle Pac again. When Orange Cassidy made his in-ring debut, he wrestled Pac. Well, he's going to wrestle him again, And the winner of that faces Kenny Omega at Double or Nothing, which I thought was kind of an odd decision, which means that even though Daniel Bryan is available now to start marketing towards Double or Nothing, which is May 30th, I guess they don't want to use him. And here's the thing, like, unless they do it on a special episode of Dynamite, which I think would be like Hogan Goldberg, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to pop a rating, but you're going to waste a pay-per-view. Because, I mean, if you look at, like, that Georgia Dome, I don't want to spend the next hour rehashing that whole history, but they really shot themselves in the foot and cut their nose off to spite their face, because, yeah, they got a good rating, but they also sold out the Georgia Dome. And had that been a pay-per-view, had Hogan Goldberg been on pay-per-view instead of Monday Nitro, I guarantee you it would have been probably their highest-selling pay-per-view they've ever done.
Or you got to understand that the money wasn't in pay-per-view at the time. It was in TV ad revenue. So, I mean, people say that, you know, yeah, they threw away the match. They didn't throw away the match because they popped that rating and they got that ad revenue, man. And that's what really, really, you know, a lot of folks don't understand. The money was in the television back then. So Nitro was where you sank your money. You know, they already knew that they were going to get X number of pay-per-view buys, and they were good with that. But, you know, when it comes to merchandise sales and those, it was literally – you know, segment for segment, every 15 minutes was scrutinized on television, and those ratings were everything back then. It was a war, and they did not want to let their guard down. But like you said, you know, this was the guy at the prom shooting his load too fast, because I guarantee you, you know, they did every single thing that they could possibly do, and more, despite themselves. And I think they really, really killed business, because you could never go back to Jobberville anymore. You couldn't just have Chris Jericho taking on, you know, Jobber of the Month just to get himself over. Now you had to do main event matches from start to finish. And that's what that hurt the business, man. I'm sort of liking every now and then when I see a Jobber match, I'd like to see somebody come out to the ring, literally win a match. Like we saw Britt Baker, you know, this time he actually got to see her against, you know, her name was Julia Hart, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on. But you got to see who Britt Baker was. She got to do her character. She got an established win to see her finisher. That's what you need. You need to have that to layer in to get these main events. But, yeah, you're right. Nitro was just blowing stuff up, man.
Well, the reason why I brought that up is if they're going with Orange Cassidy or Pac versus Kenny Omega, it's probably going to end up being Orange Cassidy. Then that takes care of May 30th. Then their next pay-per-view isn't until what? What's the one in September?
All In?
Yeah, All In. So that's June, July, August. That's like 3 or 4 months from now to build up Kenny Omega versus Daniel Bryan.
It would be huge. That's your main. That's a main event, man.
It is. I'm just wondering do we need 4 months to build that up? Like, you know, he's hot now. And I'll throw one more thing out there, and then we can just move on. So Samoa Joe was unceremoniously cut from the roster. And I think part of the issue with him was they were all in on Samoa Joe, but then he kept getting injured. And then it was like, okay, well, you know, it's end of the year budget cuts, and this guy's always injured, and we don't need him as a commentator. So, you know, we'll wish him well. And people are like,
they didn't need him as a commentator, because he looked like somebody not only pissed in his cornflakes, but his entire family. Every time you saw Joe at that announce booth, you could see he felt like he was seething rage at all time, just completely and utterly disengaged. But who knows?
So long story short, people are looking forward to him showing up in AEW too. And like him, you know, yeah, any match that he's in is going to be a main event match, but it's like, you know, a Daniel Bryan versus Kenny Omega, you want to strike while, like, right now, Daniel Bryan's the hottest free agent out there. He's hotter than Joe is.
And absolutely.
If you wait 4 months from now, this is my point. If you wait 4 months from now, you might miss your window where Daniel Bryan's super hot. Then again, the counter argument is in 4 months, the same as 1 month, people are still going to be into the idea of Daniel Bryan versus Kenny Omega. So,
yes.
We'll see. I'll give you the last word on the whole Daniel Bryan, Samoa Joe, Kenny Omega thing, and then we'll start looking at the actual show.
Well, you have an opportunity here to do what the Hardy Boys did prior to their return at WrestleMania 33. So they toured from Ring of Honor to Impact Wrestling all over the place, making these appearances at, you know, bingo halls and, you know, basketball courts, you name it. The Hardy Boys showed up to defend their Intergalactic Tag Team Championship. And you know what? It would be awesome to see Daniel Bryan do the same thing. So before you pull the plug and make him appear on AEW, have him do the little tour. Have him show up in these little pockets. Do a spot for Ring of Honor, do a spot for Impact, New Japan, do that stuff, build this guy up, then all of a sudden he's the shining gem. Now he's in AEW, and now he's facing off against Kenny Omega, who's dripping in gold, and all of a sudden you got this guy built up, because I guarantee you, whoever takes Daniel Bryan, he needs to win. Win, win, win. This will be the tale. So if someone books him correctly, this is going to be the independent wrestling main event of the century, I would say, right now. This is hot. This is hot stuff, I guarantee you. Harness it, people.
All right, so AEW Blood and Guts.
Yes.
I have the wiki open. You can kind of fill in with stuff that happened in between the matches, but the first match they have listed in the wiki is Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston,
yes,
versus Kenny Omega and Michael Nakazawa with Don Callis. Michael Nakazawa came out first. Don Callis is like, you got this. You're on your own. You're right up there with the Yuji Nagatas and the Okadas of the world. And Michael Nakazawa was like, I'm what? And so Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley came in through the side entrance, and then Kenny Omega hit him from behind. And then they had a match for about 8 minutes or so. Kenny Omega and Michael Nakazawa had the early advantage, but Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston were able to turn it around. And how did it end, Chris?
So it ended, I mean, Mox finally gave, let me see, where were we here? So yeah, so you had Mox, you know, they're in the middle of beating the living piss out of Nakazawa. So I mean, you know, Omega decided to help his friend, he waves his arms, and then all of a sudden, Mox gave poor old Nak that fucking clothesline out of nowhere for the win in 8 minutes. And I mean, he really took the head off Nakazawa with that one, man. Kenny, I guarantee you, I'm really digging the Moxley Kingston tag team. But that classic clothesline that Moxley always explodes with. He finally finished somebody off with it. So poor old Nakazawa takes the fall. Of course, you know, exactly what you would expect. You know, they teased at the beginning of this one that Kenny Omega was not going to show up, which was basically the story of the match. I mean, you even had Tony Schiavone calling him, you're a damn liar, you know what I mean? He knew that it was a fake out, and it was just Omega's way to get a cheap pop. And one of the call-outs from this match was that Omega comes to the ring, and he's, you know, he has his AEW championship with him, but you got poor old Nakazawa, who's the guy who's the signature belt holder. So he's the guy who's got the AAA belt. He's the guy with the Impact and TNA World Championships. They're basically saying that these belts mean absolutely nothing when it comes to this. So, I mean, you know, when you got Nakazawa on your TV holding those belts, that's not a good thing, Mark. Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the next match was, what did you think of the match, by the way?
You know what? It was good because, like I said, you got to see lots of good interaction. And, of course, Nakazawa is just your comedy character. And, I mean, you know, the one thing that I would say about Nakazawa is the guy can sell his ass off. You know, he's just a joke character at this point. He's just not, you know, Kenny Omega's boy that he brings along everywhere he goes. And that's the inside joke. You know, he's really got no cachet when it comes to wins and losses. But, you know, Kenny Omega strings him along and brings him along everywhere he goes. And, you know, he was a great beating pole for Moxley and Kingston in this one. So, job well done.
Alrighty. So, post-match, the Young Bucks come out and talk trash to Kingston and Moxley. The Good Brothers run in the ring from behind and attack. The Young Bucks get in the ring to direct traffic. Magic killer on Moxley. Matt smacking Moxley with a sneaker and then super kicks him. Kingston is down on the mat. Nick hits a super kick on Kingston. Brandon Cutler comes out with Omega on the stage. Kenny gets in the ring, talks to the camera for a moment, and then hits a one-winged angel on Kingston. Nick Jackson with a mock three count and a lot more taunting. So it looks like we're building towards Moxley and Kingston versus the Young Bucks, which is a bizarre match.
It's a bizarre match, but, you know, you got to do something with Moxley to keep him out of the main event scene. So are you going to quell him with tag team, you know, tag team matches? So I think, you know, you're still feuding with the with the established brass, you know, with basically the Bullet Club or whatever variation, whatever they want to call themselves right now. So basically, you're still in a main event picture. You know, this could be your B main event on a house show, for example. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, it'll give a feel-good match, whether they, you know, take away, you know, any gold when it comes to this, who knows. But I think that we need to get back to Moxley and Eddie Kingston actually winning matches. Kingston is gold. They just need to put him over, and I think pairing him with Moxley is the right thing to do. So I'm all for this, man. This will be some fun stuff. I don't know what they're doing with Brandon Cutler. What do you do with Brandon Cutler? He's not a camera guy for these guys. They keep adding parts of their puzzle. I mean, this is becoming NWO Black and White very, very fast.
It was announced that Hikaru Shida will take on Britt Baker at Double or Nothing for the Women's Championship. I mean, you know, Britt Baker's the biggest star they have, so, you know, why not? I think it's time. I think they need to put the belt on her.
Oh, yeah. Do you know why that she's the biggest star they got right now? Because she's the only one that they've done a consistent push with. They've established her character. They've established that she's got, you know, Rebel, her little goon with her and all that stuff. They did the injury angle. They gave you a reason and storyline background to give a shit about Britt Baker. And finally, I think that they finally created themselves an actual star. And Shida, you know what? She's a star on her own. So she's had that belt long enough that, you know, she's built up respect and cachet with the fans. And I'm really looking forward to this one. So Britt Baker, I tell you what, if you listen to some of our early AEW reviews, I buried this woman, but I am going to eat a giant plate of crow, Mark Radlich, because I guarantee you she has done a 180, and I actually might think that she's even pretty now. How about that?
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I've changed.
Somehow she got prettier in your eyes.
She does. She's starting winning. I'm all about the gold. I'm like Sensational Sherry. I'll bounce around for whoever's got the gold. And I think Britt Baker is money to hang your hat on right there. Perfect.
All right. So this led to this. So I've missed the last couple of weeks of AEW just because I've had other things to do. I started catching up yesterday. And they have been building up this QT Marshall Cody Rhodes feud.
Yuck.
Am I alone in saying no one gives a shit and they are pushing this boulder uphill for no good reason?
QT Marshall now has his own faction, so he separated himself from the Nightmare family. This is the entire thing. This is their poor man's attempt to do Larry Zbysko and Bruno Sammartino for long-term fans. This is Hogan and Orndorff done very shittily, because the problem is what worked with both angles was because you had a built-up partnership. Nobody cares about the Nightmare family. Nobody cares about these guys. They're just, you know, they're not enhancement talent, but, you know, everybody knows that they're basically wrestling students. So QT Marshall has done nothing. I mean, they tried everything in the world to build this guy up. They gave DDP, gave him the diamond cutter as his finisher. You know, they've done everything. But he's still QT Marshall. Nobody cares, Mark. So when you put QT Marshall in a feud with Cody Rhodes, it doesn't matter how much star power you've got there. You could have literally Brandi Rhodes come to the ring naked with a dildo, and it wouldn't matter. It would not matter. QT Marshall would not get over. But anyway, listen, they're trying every single thing in their power. But of course, Hogan must pose, and Cody wins this one in 12 minutes. What do you think?
You know, we talked about the show being very up and down. Like, I watched, and I watched so that we could talk about it, but I could not have been less interested. I do not care. I barely care about Cody Rhodes at this point. I certainly don't care about QT Marshall and him. Like, you know, he looks like one of those guys who looks in the mirror and goes, like, why can't I be a star? It's like, well, you're shorter than the average wrestler. Like, you're not, you know, Marco Stunt short, but you're still a smaller dude. You look like any white average fucking dude. There's nothing special about him. Like, he may be like a good technical wrestler, but that Adolafidia gets you on the bus. Like, there's nothing special about him. And so the fact that he's like, I'm so sick of Cody Rhodes taking all the spotlight. I'm like, okay, but Cody Rhodes is a star. Cody Rhodes has something special about him. Cody Rhodes has a legacy. You are some dude who...
named QT.
Yeah, there are some people in AEW, like, I get why they're pushing them. I get why they're trying with them. Then there are others, like, this is the Shawn Spears argument that everyone makes, where it's like, there's nothing special about Shawn Spears. But this guy looks at himself and goes, what do they got that I haven't got? Why can't I be a star too? And it's like, because you're not. You have nothing going for you that would make you a star. You have everything going for you that would make you a jabroni. You know, just a guy. Just a guy there to put over other guys. And I don't think you should be fired. I think you should absolutely be putting over other people. But they're like, no, let's put him in the pinnacle. You know, let's give him marquee matches. And that's the same thing with QT Marshall. It's like they're just looking at this guy going, we're going to, you know, strap a rocket to you. And it's like, okay, you're not going to sell people. Even the AEW audience is like, no, not this guy. You know, hit me in the head so I can see some stars.
But that's the reason why they have him basically as a manager to all these up-and-comers, you know what I mean? We get to see Anthony Ogogo at the end of this match. He comes in and, punches Cody in the guts and covers him up with a flag.
But let me interrupt you there. You compared them to the NWO Black and White. The NWO Black and White actually had people in it we knew.
Bingo, right on the money. So we don't know why these guys exist and the reason why we should care. And they haven't established why we should care about, you know, QT Marshall. You know what I mean? About this. You know,
This reminds me of the Natural Born Thrillers. Okay, so the Natural Born Thrillers.
Right on the money.
The Natural Born Thrillers also had good looking bodies. You know, and so like, at least it was like, well, here's a stable full of power plant guys. Okay. But at least they look like wrestlers. They're all big, jacked up dudes. And then there was the one, you know, and then there was the above average Mike Sanderson. Yeah. So it was like,
but that worked. He was the mouthpiece.
So it was like a posse of fucking Venice Beach weightlifters that look like Greek gods and Mike Sanders. But it worked. But after a while, it worked because they all had a look. So it's like they're trying to do the Natural Born Thrillers thing by putting a bunch of, you know, wrestling school students together, but none of them have that good look. So it doesn't work. Right.
Exactly. Exactly right. And not only that, I mean, I just don't know if we've established enough about the partnership between Cody and Marshall to care about it. Yeah, we've had a couple, you know, incidents where Marshall got frustrated and walked out. But they're trying to paint this as a blood feud when they really haven't set up anything. You know what I mean? So, and I mean, you know, Cody simply put him away. Just, you know, literally.
Why did Cody have to get blood in this match? You knew we were going to get blood in the main event. Why did you have to get blood in this stupid match?
To sell the power of the feud, I guess. You know, this is such an important feud that Cody is going to bleed for QT Marshall, even though he's beating him. So, but you got Marshall tapping out to the figure four. To me, it doesn't matter how much you bleed. All that people are going to remember is that QT just submitted to Cody. So, I mean, what have you – did you build a star? No, you didn't. You buried the guy.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. This is nothing.
So, after the match, Anthony Ogogo heads out to the ring, punches Rhodes in the midsection. It was a good-looking punch, by the way. Setting him down on the mat, and then Ogogo then covers him with the British flag. So, I guess that's probably where they'll transition to. Last week, Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page attacked Sting and Darby Allin after last night's main event. Sting is apparently out of action after Sky putting a heel hook on him. In the stands, Alex Marvez talked with Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page. Sky says Sting is nothing more than a mosquito sucking on the blood of AEW. Sky says we will kill mosquitoes, and he lets Sting know that he's overstayed his welcome. I'm the franchise now, bitch, Page says. He and Allin have a lot of history, but they are matches that nobody has ever seen. Page says Allen's paint is a cover-up, a dent Page once put in his forehead, so is this piece of metal that he had to have put in his arm. Okay?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you know what? I'll tell you what. You're trying to establish Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page, and I think that this is actually working because you got two solid, solid workers here, man. Page and Sky can go, and they didn't really do a great job of separating Scorpio Sky from SoCal Uncensored. You know what I mean? There's still a story to be told there. So do we return to that? I don't know. But, so, I mean, they're doing their level best to bury the stinger. Now he's a mosquito waiting to be swatted. So, you know, I know that they're going to have a good match with these two. I know that they're going to be able to sell, you know, with Darby Allin and with Sting. You know what I mean? So you can't go wrong with these two guys. These guys will be able to put off a good match no matter who they're paired with. And I like the new attitude with Scorpio Sky. It's given them a bit of a reason to exist. And I'm glad he's separated from SoCal Uncensored because that's just about as dead and tender overcooked meat like the New Day. So there you go.
So Allin attacks Page out of nowhere. He throws Sky into some garbage cans and is able to climb up. and hit a coffin drop on Paige. Sky runs over with a trash can and smacks Allen with it. Paige has some spike boots on and shoves Allen's face down on them. He then throws Allen down the concrete steps like you do.
Oh my God, that was brutal. Jesus, like if you plan on keeping Darby Allin alive on your show, don't throw him down over stairs, guys. You are gonna break something eventually. Holy cow! Do you see that guy who's on YouTube all the time? And basically, he throws himself on stuff. So I don't know if I don't want to say special needs, but he's a little bit crazy. And you know, he sets up like barbed wire and he jumps.
Oh
off
yeah,
stuff.
Like that. Like he's yeah, like, that doofy-looking white kid who's always, like, in the flannel and jumps off the stairs into barbed wire.
Yes, that's what Darby Allin reminds me of at this point. Why not? I guarantee you that guy's going to be all elite soon. So there you go.
Doofy kid is all elite. All right, next was a squash job for Britt Baker. She took on Julia Hart. This did not last long. I think this was roughly... Yeah. Yeah, a minute and 30 seconds.
So this is the right answer, though. You got to set up your characters. Every now and then, you need to sprinkle a couple of these wins in here. Now, AEW has gone too far, so they have Dark and they have Elevation. Way, way, way too much material on TV for this fledgling company. I'm sorry. It is way too much. It's saturating, and it's exhausting to get through. And I know that you have squash matches on those shows. Some of these shows have up to 17 matches, which I love. I love squash matches. I love short matches. I love somebody going in there saying, here's who we are. Here's my finishing move. I'm coming for the belts. Love it. But when you got 17 hours of AEW on TV, it's too much, Mark Radlich. I'm telling you. But I did love this.
I can't do Elevation and Dark. I just can't. I don't have that kind of time.
It's way too much. I like the amount of time my finger gets tired sitting on the fast forward button trying to go there. I'm like, okay, let's see their entrance, who they are. Let's go to the finish. Boom, I'm on. It's just too much wrestling on TV. And I never thought I would say that, but it is.
Next segment, Taz talks about Christian Cage's frog splash and kill switch. Taz shows Cage having a lack of explosion from his quads to get bigger impact on the splash. He then critiques his kill switch finisher. We then see how Powerhouse Hobbs threw Christian around in their match. Taz also mentions how Brian Cage defeated the number one contender, Hangman Page. Okay?
Yes.
This is what we're doing with Team Taz now. Terrific.
Ugh. This is a waste. You talk about a faction who has it all. You got Taz as your manager, and you got these jiggity jacked up guys, and then you got, you know, Ricky Sparks, who's one of the best up and comers that you could possibly have, and of course Hook, but you know, less said about that the better. But this is a faction that should be winning at least on, you know, a Darby Allin level, you know what I mean? But no,
yeah.
All the time they just, you know, they collect wins on Elevation and Dark, and that's about it. When it gets to the big stage, they cut him off, with the exception of Brian Cage last week pulling off a big win. So, man, I don't know.
Remember a few months ago when Taz yelled at Cody Rhodes? Did we ever actually get a resolution to that?
They did nothing with it. They just moved on.
Yeah, exactly. So that we can do QT Marshall versus Cody Rhodes.
Because it's important.
You know, I make fun of the WWE because it's like, you know, Vince has the people that he thinks are money, and you know they push them to the nth level, mm-hmm. and it's like, you know, and we complain because a lot of times people who haven't really earned the fans' respect or interest are pushed at the top, and you know, and people reject it, and that's how they have problems. That's, you know, they run into problems like Roman Reigns, and they ran into problems with Batista the one year they did that, you know, and there's just some people where, you know, like Baron Corbin doesn't have like legit heat where people want to see him get beat. He has like X-Pac go away heat where they don't want to see him on TV. But there he is in every segment.
X-Pac and X-Factor.
You know, but I don't think it's fair to just blame that, you know, the WWE on that, because AEW has the same problem but different. Whereas they're not pushing people they think are money. They're pushing people that are their friends. QT Marshall is Cody Rhodes' buddy. So he gets a prime spot on TV. You know,
exactly.
I mean, like, Orange Cassidy is maybe, like, the one legit star they might have made. And they made him not because they saw money in this guy, but because Tony Khan thinks he's hilarious.
That's it. Right on the money. This is Vince McMahon 2021. You know that. It's the exact same formula. The guy who owns the company thinks this guy is funny, and he's going to get a push. And that's exactly what we've been criticizing Vince McMahon for forever. And it's being done right in front of our eyes. But the internet wrestling community loves it, so, you know, they can do no wrong at this point. But the tides will turn.
I don't think people are being honest with themselves, though, because there's no possible way people can have that much cognitive dissonance and look at AEW and not see that it's a very few handful of people who get big pushes that are favorites of management or friends of management or what have you, and maybe a handful of people who came from somewhere else who they think are legitimate stars and they think they have to push. And then Right. Everybody else, like, who would, like, legitimately be good on television and would be a star and would actually, like, garner attention for the show, like a Brian Cage, get nothing. Like, you know, they did the segment maybe a week or two ago with Brian Cage where Ricky Starks is all happy as a clam, and, you know, and Brian Cage, it looks like he's just rolling his eyes, and on camera, they're like, you got a problem, Cage? And him and Starks almost go at it, and Taz breaks him up. And I'm like, I'm wondering how much of that is real. Like, how much of that is Brian Cage is like, this place sucks.
I guarantee you, like, Brian Cage is a star, and for some reason, this guy seems to have added an extra, if it's possible, an extra 20 pounds of muscle on top of that frame, but the guy is still wrestling like a luchador. So I don't know. He's getting in dangerous territory where he's on the verge of becoming Scott Steiner back in Big Papa Pump era, you know what I mean, where he became basically immobile. And I don't want to see that with Brian Cage, because I think he has a few good years on top somewhere, but you got to pull the trigger on him, man. And I think this guy, you know, he showed his stuff in Impact Wrestling, but I really was excited when he signed with AEW, and I just wish that they would give him that push. And they're always holding back on Team Taz, and I don't know what it is in favor of QT Marshall. Fuck him.
Yep. Speaking of fuck these guys, the Varsity Blondes versus SCU versus the Acclaimed versus Jurassic Express.
I am going to tell you, I get super excited every time I see the Varsity Blondes because they speak to me as that 80s babyface tag team. You know, these are the dynamic dudes, the Fantastics, the Rock and Roll Express. And they've got Brian Pillman Jr. And actually, that Griff Garrison guy looks like, you know, he's straight out of, I don't know, world class, almost like a Sean Simpson type of character. I really, really dig the Varsity Blondes. I know that they're, you know, basically a jobber team at this point. But, you know, they just had Dark Side of the Ring with Brian Pillman. And, you know, I haven't watched the complete thing, but I got the gist of what was going on there. And I think that, you know, they could have milked a little bit of that, putting it in with, you know, putting them out there. And they didn't do nothing with this one. They sort of just dropped the ball on it. You know what I mean? They're continually burying my Varsity Blondes. And I'm very high on them. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Or two young cocks, as they're called.
So the Acclaimed are still the best tag team in wrestling. I'm sorry. Max Caster. I watch a lot of AEW on, like, fast forward. Let's just, you know, trying to get through the matches. I'll stop for certain segments. I'll stop if there's a match I really want to see how it plays out. I, like, Max Caster is legit stop the tape for me.
Max Caster on this one? Boy, he took a shot on this one. Do you remember what he said?
He said something, was it something like, treat me like a breathalyzer and blow me?
Or was listen to this.
Or was that Adam Page? Because I watched a lot of AEW yesterday.
He goes to Brian Pillman Jr. and he says, and I quote, "A temporary thing. In 10 years, you'll be on Dark Side of the Ring."
I do remember that, yeah. That was a great line. He is so good.
That is hot as a knife right there, man. Holy shit. Wow.
Good. I look, he is one of the few things on AEW that doesn't seem contrived. Like,
he does. This is what you're looking for. You know, every time they come out, you got that feeling, that vibe of, like, anything can happen. What are they going to say next? And I love that. We haven't had that in a while. But these guys seem a hot script, and it's great.
So this one was won by SoCal Uncensored, Chris Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, because of course they are.
Like, yeah, but think about this. They got this gimmick where SoCal Uncensored say if they lose a match, they're going to retire. So they're on a winning streak, and they're on one of these storylines that you can never actually pay off because, you know, these things never end the way you want them to. So the way that this angle is going is that they're going to go out on top as tag team champions. So if you don't give the belts to, you know, SoCal Uncensored, basically if you finish off the team and they're done. So is this their farewell tour? Do they have different plans? Are they breaking them up? Who knows? But you know the fact that, you know, you got Christopher Daniels. I mean, he is, you know, part of basically the backstage area when it comes to AEW. So you know he's not going nowhere. And Frankie Kazarian's lucky to have a paycheck. But they've got Elevation and Dark, so he doesn't have to worry about a paycheck either. So
they,
anyway,
just,
there you go.
AEW always misses a chance to elevate new people. Like, you know, I think the Acclaimed are red hot. Anthony Bowens can wrestle again. He's back from injury, and it's like, here's a really great opportunity to elevate this team. Like, I'm not saying you have to put the tag team champions on, because I guess whoever won this goes to Dynamite to face the Young Bucks May 12th. And why not have, like, a really hot Young Bucks Acclaimed match? Or, hey, you keep putting the Varsity Blondes in these big matches. Why not give them kind of a come-from-behind win? You know, make a Chris Bailey happy. Nope. SoCal Uncensored, nope. I feel like, get every other chance. That's my big complaint, is that I feel like every time SoCal Uncensored are involved in something, they always win.
Do you remember when Private Party got that upset win over the Young Bucks? On one of the early episodes of AEW.
It was the very first episode. It was like the first episode of AEW Dynamite, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, you popped. You're like, my God, they just made stars here tonight. You saw it in the tumbleweeds. You know what I mean? Here we go. We got a brand new team. It's exciting. They just beat the Young Bucks. They're here to elevate new talent. And then you put SCU over in this match again. Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Amazing.
I know, you know, people are going to listen to this who are like AEW stands or whatever. Like, oh, they're just complaining. Like, AEW is the best thing on TV. Look, I'm calling it as I see it. And here's the thing. It can't just be about wrestling. It can't just be about flippy-doos. It can't just be about doing a gymnastics floor routine. You have to push new stars. You have to, you know, push new wrestlers. You have to make new stars. You have to tell good stories. It can't just be about every, you know, 2 hours of best bout machines.
You're right. And you know what? AEW has them all. They've got the future sitting on their payroll right now. They do not have to hire one more person, because if they took and repackaged all these guys that are on Elevation and Dark, they could literally have another promotion all to its own. They have that many people signed under contract. And Jericho was saying, remember when we talked about Samoa Joe at the beginning of the hour there? Jericho even came out on Twitter and basically said, we cannot continue to keep hiring people, but, you know, I am interested in Samoa Joe, basically. So they're recognizing that, okay, guys, too much. You know, we can't take every single cast off to WWE is sending us. But boy, did Mickie James look good. Anyway, keep going.
So the SoCal Uncensored won at 9 minutes and 12 seconds. I mean, it was a fine enough match. Like they all halfway decently worked together. I mean, it's another four team match. They do shit tons of these all the time, and it's like, okay, whatever. And then again, I wasn't super interested in who won, so I kind of just like. But I think by this point, I was like, get on with the whole reason I'm even watching tonight. Get to Blood and Guts already. Any other thoughts about this?
You know, basic nuts and bolts match here. I think, like you said, now with the Acclaimed, this is the tag team. And if not, what about the friggin' Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, the Jurassic Express? I love these guys. These guys have money printed all over them, and you continuously put over SCU.
Yep. I mean, they gave them new music and everything. It's so weird. Uh-huh. They have so much invested in Jungle Boy, and yet they don't ever like really pull the trigger and actually do anything with him.
Exactly. It's just bizarre. It's just bizarre.
You know, might help their writing, Chris Bailey.
What's that, sir? I know exactly what could help their writing.
Grammarly might help the people at AEW write a better show.
I think it actually corrects booking mistakes. So listen, Tony Khan, if you are interested in getting your product right, why not invest in Grammarly, which will fix all of your booking errors and all of your grammar errors as well. Tell them a little bit more, Mark Radledge.
I will. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M Network. Again, that's getgrammarly.com/W2M Network to download Grammarly for free.
And you know what happened? I just put this entire thing right through Grammarly, like the results of this card. And for some reason on this match, Grammarly corrected the winners from SCU to the Acclaim. So there you go. That's how effective this is.
Yep. Treat me like a breathalyzer and blow me. You can't say that on TV. I laughed so hard at that. All right. Next week, Jon Moxley defends the IWGP Championship against Nuji Nagata.
So that's fun. My God. No, that's not fun. And you know what? You know what? I'm giving it to the marks this time. Oh, my God. Yuji Nagata, New Japan. Wah. He's great. No. Yuji Nagata is old. He's got a basic style. He wrestles like Kurt Angle in diapers. And I am tired of his ass on my screen. And you know what? Every time I see him, it's just the basic same style match. I'm not excited for this. Not one bit. Get this off my screen, Mark Radlich. Who cares? How about that shit?
Didn't he just wrestle recently?
Who's that?
Nuji Nagata.
Oh, yeah. He's back on the go here now. I mean, this is Yuji Nagata. So WCW fans will recognize Yuji Nagata from, you know, from their ranks back in the day. And, man, they didn't push him at all because, I mean, he's as bland as spoiled milk in the cooler, man. It's just, I don't know. New Japan wrestling fans or Japanese wrestling fans in general are, I got to take my hat off to them because they like a lot of shitty wrestling. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Okay, yeah, he just wrestled at Wrestle Kingdom 15 in the Tokyo Dome in January.
Yep, exactly.
All right, moving on. So then Tony Schiavone interviewed Kenny Omega. Omega comes out with Nakazawa. He hypes the crowd up for Blood and Guts, but he doesn't seem too interested in himself. Schiavone says, the two top contenders will go 1-on-1 next week. It'll be Pac. I don't know how they came up with this, but Pac versus Orange Cassidy with the winner facing Omega at the pay-per-view. Omega talks about the AEW rankings and why wins matter. He brings up the history with Pac and how people would want to see them have a big rematch. Omega wants to see that match happen and wants Schiavone to just announce that match. Orange Cassidy comes out to stage for a big pop. Omega laughs at the thought of Cassidy winning the match and facing him. Omega says he's a feel-good wrestler as people like him, but they can't be like him because they can be like him. Nobody can be like Omega, though. Omega says Cassidy isn't championship material, except for the sunglasses, which you clearly ripped off from me, he says. Omega takes them off and checks out Cassidy's shades. They says they are legit. Omega says Cassidy won't ever take his title, but he did take up Omega's time, so he's going to take something of Cassidy's. He puts the shades on. Nakazawa says they look better on him. Omega tells Cassidy that maybe in 10 years, when Cassidy becomes a full-grown man, maybe he will see him in the ring. Omega heads off with Cassidy standing there looking annoyed.
I did not see this, but now I really don't want to see this.
Yeah, the little bit that I saw, I know I dozed off during this. Like I was getting really tired, and I watched like Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega is a great wrestler, and Kenny Omega, I think, is a great presence. Don Callis should do all his talking for him.
Oh, 100%. Well, who do you compare him to in WWE? Like just. Actually, you know what? He reminds me of 2000-level Triple H, where every single time you saw that microphone head to Triple H's lips, your brain just went dead. Mm-hmm. And you got the long, dragged-out promo. Ah. Yes. Oh, my God. This is how I feel when Omega gets on a mic.
Kenny Omega, you know, for all these years in wrestling, still gives promos like he's a little kid doing practice promos in front of his mirror in the bathroom. Into a hairbrush.
This is exactly into a hairbrush.
Oh, you know, boy. He looks like somebody playing wrestler, and it's really a shame because, like, I like what they're doing with Omega, and I'm into the Omega storyline where he's the belt collector and all of this.
Yeah, I do too. I like the gimmick.
You know, he's the one reason I still watch Impact, because if it wasn't for Kenny Omega, I wouldn't. But he needs Don Callis to talk for him. So then Miro heads out to speak with Schiavone, because yes, two interview segments in a row. Miro just takes the mic and says nobody is going to distract him from his destiny. He says if someone has a title, they have a problem. Miro pulls out a signed contract and says 7 days from tonight, he's coming for AEW TNT champion Darby Allin on next week's Dynamite. Miro says next week the world finds out when the what the, who wrote this? Miro says next week the world finds out when the mind who doesn't mind dying,
the man who doesn't mind dying, Wrestling Inc., get
on the Grammarly.
Indeed. We just sold the product.
When the man who doesn't mind dying meets the man who doesn't mind killing him, put that on a t-shirt, Mindy.
That's
fucking
nice.
Fantastic. Yeah, that is money right there. I need a shirt that says the man, you know, when the man who doesn't mind dying meets the man who doesn't mind killing him. That's perfect. I've never had, not since Miro came out on a tank at WrestleMania, have I had more respect for that guy.
So listen to this. So they finally course corrected Miro, and I have beaten the shit out of Miro since he's arrived in AEW because they had him as the, you know, the best friend of Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford, you know what I mean? The best man at the wedding. They did the whole best man. He's a gamer. Oh, he's a little schlub. He's got blonde hair and he likes to play video games. This is what you do with a killer heel. This is a guy that was driving to the ring in a tank to face John Cena at WrestleMania. A main event money player, and this is what you did? Now they got it right. What I've asked for from Miro, they've actually delivered. So this is a positive note. AEW, you've done something right. Welcome back, killer heel, Miro.
So if I'm writing AEW's Dynamite show next week,
yep.
Here's what happens. Miro kills Darby Allin in like seconds. Just
destroys him.
Yeah, just he gets no offense. He just murdered, like within 2 minutes, it's just clothesline, body slam, pile driver, you know, camo clutch, and then, you know, and then that's it. Darby Allin's dead. And then when he's done,
he beats the shit Sting with the bat.
Well, hang
he
on.
Just kills
get,
him all.
Hang on. Let me tell my story.
All right.
Let me tell my story. I'm pitching you a movie, okay?
Oh, go.
This is the Miro story. So Miro squashes Darby Allin, just breaks him like fucking Bane breaking Batman's bat back.
All in. Perfect.
Okay. But it's not enough just to win the title and beat him. He like throws the title to the side. He's like, I don't even want this. I just want to make a point. And
loves
so
it.
He picks up Darby Allin's corpse and breaks every single table around the ring, throws him around. Like, I want Darby Allin to be a bloody mess. And so then Sting comes out, and Miro just takes the bat right out of Sting. Like, Sting swings for the Green Mile. Miro just grabs the bat. He's like, nope, and bashes Sting over the head with it. Okay,
but
Sting's dead.
Just
Sting's
sold
dead.
A million tickets, just
okay?
Like that.
And then, you know, Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page come out because they wanted their shot at Darby Allin, and they wanted their shot at Sting, and they're like, "What the fuck, dude?" And Miro's like, "Don't you what the fuck me?" And beats the living shit out of Ethan Page and
Scorpio Sky.
But like, it doesn't stop. Like it, like now he is. Hospitalized Darby Allin. He has hospitalized Sting. He's working his way through Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page one on two. And now, all of the AEW, like backstage crew, all of the security and everybody has to like drag Miro screaming and foaming at the mouth from the ringside area and get him out of there because if he doesn't stop, he's going to keep murdering people on this roster.
And then Samoa Joe's music play, and they have a stare down, and you just made $1 million.
You can do that, or you can just cut out with them dragging a crazed Miro away.
That's what you need to do, yep. Absolutely have him murder people, and leave everybody laying, and this is the killer heel we wanted the entire time.
Right. And
you're
like,
100%.
What? You know, I have Jim Ross like, well, you know, an Excalibur, like, what do you do now? Like, he's the TNT champion. He, you know, are we going to suspend him? What can we possibly do with this guy? And he comes out next week, and he was like, I'm the best. Come take this title. You see, I took out four guys in one show, in one shot. I took out four.
Now,
I took out four of your best. I took out your TNT champion. I took out the Icon Sting. I took out your new hire, and I took out your up-and-comer. What else you got, AEW? And that's Miro.
So that's what we would like to happen. Here's what's actually going to happen. Because they have a little tiny booking detail that you may have missed. So Miro has Shivani read the stipulation that Darby Allin will forfeit the title, get this, if he's unable to wrestle.
Right.
Why is that put in there? Is that put in there by coincidence, just a throwaway?
No,
sir.
Because he's going to get attacked backstage, and that's how he's going to win the title.
Shit. Right? You just murdered your killer heel. You just murdered a great angle. That's what they're going to do.
Yep.
I can guarantee you that.
Anyway. Yeah, now that you mention it, that's what's going to end up happening. He's going to end up being just given the title, like, he's the $1 million man, you know, from Andre the Giant. Be like, well, I beat him up backstage, I win, and then they'll
Darby Allin saves face.
And then they'll have their match at Double or Nothing, and Darby Allin will win the title back, and you'll kill any credibility Miro had.
Right. Oh, God. Oh, I'm getting physically ill thinking about that. Let's go to Blood and Guts.
All right. So,
hey, do you remember back in WCW when, you know, you had the Road Warriors and everybody and all those awesome Blood and Guts match marks? Do you remember those? Do you remember when Dustin Rhodes back in WCW wrestled inside the Blood and Guts cage?
I think it was called something else back then.
Oh, really? What was it called, Mark?
Oh, gosh. It's a Matthew Broderick movie. Dabney Coleman, Shall We Play a Game?
War Games!
That's the one!
But we are legally bound not to say War Games, so we have to call it Blood and Guts and allude to its history inside of wrestling. How they're getting away with this? This is Scott Hall and Kevin Nash showing up on Nitro and calling them and saying, you know where they're from? Well, yeah, you know what Blood and Guts actually is, don't you? It's fucking War Games. It's a total ripoff, and I'm okay with it. I really don't care. Call it what you want. We had War Games on Dynamite, so I was perfectly pleased that they made it. But one interesting note before we begin, guess what? If you bought tickets to this show, what's the one thing that's going to really piss you off?
What's that?
This was the only match you would have seen live. You would have watched the entire show on a video screen because this thing took so long that anyone who bought tickets outside of the people, outside of your roster members and your camera crew who sat at ringside singing along to Judas, outside of those people, you did not get to see one single match. The Blood and Guts match was literally the only live match on the show. How about that?
Oh, really? The whole first hour was taped?
The whole first hour was taped, and you watched it on a screen with everybody else when you got into the building. What do you think of that? Would you? And they actually, you know, they offered fans in the arena apparently refunds. So, what do you think of that shit?
That's weird.
I would be pissed. Yeah. I'd be pissed. But the reason was because it takes apparently a erroneous amount of time to assemble a cage. So there you go. That's why.
Gotcha.
Bingo.
All right. So this was the Pinnacle. Versus the Inner Circle. Pinnacle came out in all white gear. The Inner Circle came out in dark blue prison jumpers. Sure. Sean Spears enters the match first for the Pinnacle. Guevara entered in from the Inner Circle. They went at it. Spears runs in with a chair, but Guevara stops him. Spears then hits a sky high, puts the chair in the corner. Harwood attacks Guevara. Spears gets the chair and cracks Sammy over the head. And then Ortiz entered. Okay, so I have this backwards. My apologies. So Guevara and Dex Harwood start the match. Guevara runs, leaps over the ropes, separating the two rings, and takes down Harwood. Spinebuster on Guevara. Harwood tries for the pin, but there are no pins or submissions, blah, blah, blah. Guevara recovers and sends Harwood into the corner. Both climb to the top rope, hanging on the cage and swinging away until Harwood gets sent down to the mat, tweaking his knee. Looks like Harwood is already busted open. Yeah, they got blood really early in this. This is like
really early. Now, they had a warning at the beginning of the show that, you know, maybe there was going to be some excessive violence, and you knew that they were going to have blood in this match. But Cody went and ruined the whole thing by bleeding in one of the first two matches, so, you know, there you go. Keep on going.
Yeah, the effect not quite as effective. Right. Guevara hits a double springboard cutter as the clock ticks down, and then Short Spears enters the match. Okay, now we're caught up again. Right. He does his thing, or Ortiz then enters the match. He comes in with a chair, and he throws it right at Spears. Someone's really going to get hurt one of these days when they're chucking chairs at each other.
Oh, man. They literally throw them with, like, reckless abandon. It's crazy.
Yeah. He quickly puts down Harwood. He jams Spears' throat onto the chair and then throws it at Harwood. Spears and Guevara jump on the top rope between the two rings and swing away. Ortiz throws a chair at Spears, and he takes a step over to the rope Sammy is standing on, then takes a Spanish fly. That Spanish fly looked pretty cool.
Oh, man. You talk about range on that one. It's beautiful. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was great.
Guevara busted open. Now Ortiz beats up Spears and Harwood some more. So then Cash Wheeler enters the match. And I was so, like, I don't know if he did this on purpose, but Cash Wheeler came in like he was a newborn baby deer. He's like, he's like losing his balance and shit.
Yeah, it looked like he was gas coming to the ring. It looked like he was super excited backstage and almost like he had to pee but didn't get a chance to go before he left. And he was just all over the place. It was funny.
Yeah, there was some sloppy shit going on here, and it started with that. Wheeler leaps in and just takes down Ortiz and Guevara with reckless abandon. Yeah, again, he just kind of threw himself at him. He's like, ah! Assisted brainbuster by FDR and Ortiz. Santana can't wait to get into the match. As the Pinnacle beats up on two members of the Inner Circle, Santana then enters the match, and he takes down all three members. It's a huge Uranage on Wheeler. Everyone battling during the commercial break. Guevara and Ortiz each get sent hard into the cage. Wardlow then enters the match, and then they go to commercial again. Jake Hager comes in like a house of fire, man. Like normally, like Jake Hager's matches are kind of slow and plodding, and you know, not particularly interesting. He was on fire tonight. I have to give Jake Hager a lot of credit.
Yeah, he looked impressive in the match. And, man, he could, like you said, it's finally a little bit of fire out of Hager. And I think that's what's missing. He always seems like he's in, like, second gear. Just can't get out of it. You know what I mean? But this was not that time.
Hager bomb on Wheeler. Ankle lock on Spears. Spears taps, but all 10 men have to be in the match. Wardlow and Hager face off for a moment. Then the big guys go to war. They look like they were really potatoing each other, too. It looked like rough. Everyone throwing big shots and end up near the cage. Wardlow clotheslines him into the cage. Spears hits C4 on Guevara. MJF comes in. Woo! Crap.
They've been building this, and I think they did a good job of holding them back. Mm-hmm. But this was great. Didn't one of the guys before MJF got in there? Which one of these guys had tapped out, but it didn't count? It looked like the match was over,
Spears.
But then all of a sudden,
you
had... Oh, okay, right on. Yeah, it was Spears. Okay, right on. Yep.
Crowd boos as MJF makes his way in. Wardlow with a chop block on Hager. MJF then jumps in and stomps away on Hager. Yeah, that looked rough, too. Looked like they were really, like, kicking his leg. He then taunts a bit and yells at Jericho. Wheeler is very bloodied now, maybe more than anyone else. The Pinnacle huddles up in one ring. Jericho comes in. He's got the bat. They used to call Chris Jericho Crazy Joe. Now they can call him Batman.
I love it.
Everyone pairing off and swinging away. Now that everyone is in the match, it's submit or surrender. Spears climbs up the cage. Jericho follows him and chokes him a part of the cage. Holy shit. I can't imagine. Like, I know I ragged on Spears in the beginning, but, man, he took everything. He was like, listen, don't anyone say a word. Let me just pull my pants down. I'm going to shove this lube up there. Have fucking at it. Do whatever you want to me. Like, okay.
It's true.
Kick me in the jimmy. Yes, do it again. That was Shawn Spears last night. He's the fucking MVP of this thing, man. Like, he really...
Yeah.
As much
he
as
sold
I,
the shit out of the thing, yep.
Yeah, as much as I ragged on him at the beginning, like, he is nothing going on nowhere. Like, it was like he knew that that's what I thought of him, and he went into this match and go, I'll show that fat fucking Rattledge. I'll show him. I'm gonna take an entire high-speed rail train right up my ass. How about that? Okay.
Perfect.
I mean, I'll give him credit where credit's due. You know, for anyone listening to this, it's like, oh, all they do is make fun of AEW. Like, Shawn Spears sucks, but he didn't suck last night. Last night, he took a fucking beating for the cause.
Listen, I think they got Shawn Spears basically in the Tully Blanchard role here, and this is one of the first times where I could really see that, you know, he put in maximum effort here. I don't know if the critique of him is starting to get on his nerves and, you know, he's stepping up his game, but he was out for blood on this one, man. I really, really enjoyed it. He was super selling. He was taking stiff shots. He was doing it all, man. He wasn't just trying to put himself over. He put the entire match over, which I loved.
Shawn Spears walked into an S&M bar and said, I'll take everything.
Right here in this hole. Double.
See my asshole? I don't want to know what you're doing, but do everything, okay? People like pull it on their collars. I'm like, Jesus, this podcast. To all of our friends in the wrestling shed, here's what you're missing out on.
Call out the Chedna boys at the wrestling shed. There you go.
All right, so they go to commercial. One ring has been torn apart. Yeah, they came back, and I was like, oh, my God, they tore apart yet another ring.
Yeah, man, this was nuts. Like, I think one of the things, the spectacle of this particular one, when you consider it, is what really, really made this. You know, it was a lot of stiff action. They weren't really going to town, except for Sammy Guevara and you know, a little bit of Sean Spears. Those were the only two who were going upstairs and doing anything, like, really, really life-threatening. But they were really laying it in. All the other people were laying it in. They used foreign objects. They hauled out forks. They destroyed the ring. They climbed cages. You know, they had every little trick in the book that you would do during war games, and really, really, it looked punishing. So that's the entire goal of this match, and it worked, in my opinion, except for where we're about to head, which I'm going to criticize this ending because it's just an example of WCW, you know, or AEW, I should say. You know, they're the king of the prom. They got, you know, the queen ready to go, ready to take her back to the hotel room on grad night, and they're ready to, you know, really lay it in here and really do the job, and he doesn't make it out of the bathroom. just shoots it right in his pants.
Why am I covered in goo?
That's what this is. Oh no!
Oh no!
That's what this is.
Well, let's get there. So they've got the exposed wood now. Santana and Ortiz, with the help of Sammy, hit stereo spike pile drivers. Spears has taken down the top rope and was going to hit Jericho with it. Ortiz has Spears in a tree of whoa. Ortiz puts a chair in front of him. Whoa. Guevara with the coast to coast and drills the chair into Spears. Jericho ends up getting that turnbuckle part and smacks Spears with it. Again, just do everything to me, guys. Just do it. Do it all. Santana suddenly has a fork in his hand, and I'm like, oh my God, he's going all Abby. He's going Abdullah the Butcher. No!
And he sucked on the fork after driving it in his head. That's the key part of this. This was great.
That was gross. Ortiz holds MJF, also busted open. Gets gouged in the forehead with it. So here's the thing. If you're going to do fork shots, you have to get close-ups.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Which they did not get. So,
that was strange. It's a weird
way to do it. The camera work in AEW tends to suck. They cut too quickly. They don't focus on things they need to focus on. They don't go to the right camera when you need a close-up. So they wasted the fork spot here. Inner Circle looked to have MJF on his own as Jericho chokes Wardlow out with a bat. Wardlow finally gets involved, taking on the entire group. He throws Guevara up high in the air. Yeah, that looked nasty.
Whoa.
He got some fucking height on that one. Santana, Santana smacks Wardlow with a club. Ortiz hits him with a chair. Guevara with a chair shot to the head. Inner Circle continues with momentum until Tully Blanchard throws referee into the barricade and takes the key to the cell. MJF is able to escape and run up the cell. Jericho follows, tossing Blanchard aside. Jericho climbs to the top of the cage.
Pulls his fat ass up to the top of the cage.
I don't even need to read the rest of this. So they did the Fujiwara armbar spot, you know, where it was like he wanted Chris to submit, but there's no referee, so how do you submit him up there? And so he begged off of it. And then it was like, well, I got a better idea. So he takes Jericho to the edge of the cage, and he's like, quit, or I'm going to throw him off the cage. And you're like, whoa.
No, he just hit him between the eyes with the ring. So they've set up that, you know, MJF has this ring, and when you get hit with it, you're rendered unconscious. So basically now you've got a bleeding, unconscious Chris Jericho on the top of the cage, wavering, and MJF is threatening to throw his ass off. That's where we are right now.
So he's looking at the Inner Circle. They're like basically, quit or I'm going to kill him. They're like, all right, we quit. We give up. He's like, great.
They literally quit to save Jericho. Yep.
Yep. And then he threw him off anyway.
Hey, sir. So into the giant crash pad, by the way, which was very obvious. But I tell you what, so we know the situation here. So the truth of this match, Jericho has a tour with Fozzy this summer. So this is his way of writing him off TV and doing that whole thing. So I don't think you're going to see Jericho on Dynamite, or if we do see him on Dynamite, he's going to have to take time off to lick his wounds from this, you know, utter obliteration. In one sense, I really dug the ending. In another sense, it felt like Kenny Omega and John Moxley and Sparklers. You know what I mean? You're like, my God, can they stop screwing up endings? But on paper, I'm sure that this sounded exciting, but on TV, you're like, what? They gave up after all this? Even Sean Spears looked up and said, fuck this. I did all this for you guys to surrender? Like, stop.
Like, he's starting to pull train cars out of his ass. He was like, wait, what?
I took all this in my anus for this?
Yeah. I don't hate it. Like, can you give me a little bit more, like, why you think, what is it? What exactly is the problem here? Like, you think, like, he just should have beaten him clean? Or, because, like, to me, this made MJF more of a heel. You know, like you know, yeah. quit or I'll kill him. Okay, we quit. I'm going to kill him anyway. Okay, so now he looks like a super big dick. What's the problem?
Yes. So it's just the visual of the ending, I think. I don't think anyone expected, you know, them to just go, okay, we give up. And that's the ending. Like, it was super anticlimactic. I think that's the way it is. I think they should have had I don't know. I'm on two minds with this, Mark, because I think the ending is fitting. I do like the drama of it, but just having them submit, I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway,
they would have been better if he was like submit, and they're like, what do we do? Like, maybe try to, like, run up there, you know, and as, like, maybe Jake Hager or Sammy Guevara, like, climbs to the top of the cage, he's like, fuck this, and he just throws Chris Jericho off, and now Chris Jericho's dead.
And then they call it off. That's what they should have done, I think. Yeah, have everybody scramble to the top of the cage to try to protect him, and then MJS just gives him the shove. That's your ending right there. And then they go, holy shit, okay, we got to stop this. Then you signal for the ending. I tell you what, it would have been a total disaster is if they gave up and he didn't throw him down. That would have blew up the internet. People would have lost their shit. But anyway, they went ahead and they threw him right down through those corrugated steel platform tiles.
Yes.
I love it.
That broke like fucking foam.
Oh, yeah, like snapped off like styrofoam you get like inside a TV box or something. Poof.
Yeah. Anyway. Overall, it was okay. There were a lot of fun spots to it.
It was.
A lot of blood. Here's the thing, though. I couldn't tell why guys were bleeding so fast. And I feel like they didn't build up to it. They just got blood. Like, they're like, okay, ding, 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 and someone has blood already. It's like that meme on the, I log in, get on Twitter, and I'm in a fight.
Well, you know what? At least blood was coming out of their head. You had Cody Rhodes who got busted open, and it looked like he put blood on his cheek. I was like, what? What kind of bleeding is this? but yeah, I know what you mean. They didn't spend enough time building up. If you're going to bust somebody open, let's see a spot and make a big deal of it. That had to bust them open, my God. But no, yeah. We had to imagine in our mind why someone got busted open. I don't know. It was weird. But you know what? It was not a failure. And in regards to all the history of all these blood and gut matches throughout the years, you know, those blood and guts matches throughout all the years in WCW, Mark, and now in NXT, you know, that they're having, this one was not one of the worst ones. It had a lot of big spots. It had a unique ending because we haven't seen that one before. And, you can say what you want, but controversial ending, I will say. I think this will titillate and disappoint all at once.
Yeah, what's been the buzz on this? I haven't really been following the buzz on this match.
I think there's a little bit of fanboy outrage on the way that they just gave up. I don't think people are liking that aspect of it. But like I said, I'm on two minds. Is it right? Is it wrong? I don't know. It's speculation. But I do like the thing of threatening his life, throwing him off the cage. You know, they made a big deal out of it. You know, and they played into history. You know, Mick Foley went through that table for all our sins back in the day. And we've been paying for it ever since. There you go.
All righty. Like I said, the first hour of the show was fine. It was not all of it was great, but it was okay. And then Blood and Guts was better than average cage match, but not great either. It was good. It was good. It was solid.
This is on free TV. Wrap your head around that. Free TV.
No, I get it. You know, that's why I don't complain too much.
Yeah, I mean, we got this for nothing, and I guarantee you, I do not want a refund. Man, this was a good night of action. No complaints here. AEW, you earned my money. And I didn't spend any, but you earned it. There you go.
All right, so we'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll do Under Siege. Have they announced what the main event for Under Siege is yet?
I think they have. I can't recall it at the moment. They have. Jesus. I don't remember it. I'd have to look it up.
Let's see. There's a six-way number one contenders match. There's Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers versus Eddie Edwards and Finn Juice. There's Jordan Grace and Rachel Ellering versus Fire and Flava.
Good.
So, okay.
Yes.
And then the main event
is announced.
Okay. So I guess...
Yeah, so it's what you said, a special main event. Kenny Omega teaming with the Good Brothers against Eddie Edwards and Finn Juice. Eddie Edwards. Do not like.
Okay. And then they said Kenny Omega's first Impact title match is at the next pay-per-view, isn't it?
Correct. That's exactly right.
Slammiversary. Which I guess is in June.
Slammiversary, and I love Slammiversary. Even in their dying days, they always put an effort into Slammiversary. And what's even more important is with so many talent, so many people unsigned right now, that's an encouraging sign because, AEW is in bed with Impact, and they could make a special deal to bring one of these guys back to the table. So Samoa Joe, Daniel Bryan, everybody's on the table. Even Mickey James looking fine. Who knows? Boy, does she look fine.
All right, well, this isn't going to happen until July. Are we sure that that's right?
Right.
That's when he's doing... That's when his title defense is?
I'm pretty certain, yes.
Kenny...
Yes.
This is always good podcasting. Omega's first...
This is what we do.
Impact title match. Kenny Omega... Under Siege on May 15th. Okay, but then I just saw that they have him in a six-man. What the hell,
they have
man?
Him in a six... Yep.
That's not a title defense.
Wait. Against all odds. June 12th. Impact Plus. Betcha that's it.
Maybe.
Against all odds.
People listening to this like, what the fuck, guys?
Guys, Jesus! Against all odds. No, not the Phil Collins song, you meatballs. Impact Wrestling. Speaking of Phil Collins, boy, did we hit up one of our sponsors. Right now, you can listen to Against All Odds on Amazon Music, Mark.
Thanks. Let me write that down. Yeah! Totally, man! If you want to check out Phil Collins or any of the music that we talk about in the Metal Hammer of Doom, if you want to be like Alexis Haina and listen to the Fits and Tantrums, you can check that all out on Amazon Music. And if you click our link at getamazonmusic.com/W2M, you can get yourself a free 30 days of Amazon Music, and you can stream all the music you like.
See that? What a segue. Brilliant.
Okay.
Let's wrap her up,
so
baby.
So they have Against All Odds scheduled for June 12th, which is fine.
Yep.
Does not say if this is Kenny Omega's first title. All right, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I should probably watch the Impact and actually pay attention to what's happening. Anyway.
Let's do it.
As you said, to wrap up this elongated, painful segment, we'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll review Under Siege and then... We'll take a pause for the cause and come back and review WrestleMania Backlash. That'll be May 20th.
All right. Sounds like a party, baby.
But before that, you're going to be on the Mania of WrestleMania 2 this Monday at noon with me and Pat. Yep.
That's going to be a great time. We're digging back into the past. You remember when wrestling mattered? Remember when Hulk Hogan was the king of wrestling on television right then, at the height of his powers, the heavyweight champion taking on King Kong Bundy inside a steel cage. And this WrestleMania emanated from not one, not two, but three venues, Mark Radlich. And the results were varied. So you're going to see the best and the dirt worst of pro wrestling here on WrestleMania 2. Not one of the highest rated WrestleManias, and you're about to find out why. There you go.
All right,
that's the teaser.
So today we'll have later today we'll have a review of the Mitchells versus the Machines. Then tonight we're going to do a Damn You Hollywood for the 10th anniversary re-release of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. We reviewed Pennyworth yesterday. We reviewed the new Looney Tunes season 1D. We had a re-release of Brujeria, Viva Presidente Trump, and Azopatzla. Jesse dropped an Unspoken Issues. We had a re-airing of Rogue One. Plus we reviewed the Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the video game soundtrack. And Sean and I reviewed Scott Pilgrim Color Collection Volume 1, which is Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little World and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. On Sunday, my daughter, Robert, and I reviewed Demon Slayer Mugen Train. We've got re-airings of our Days of Future Past review, The Twilight Saga, and Jessica Jones Season 1 coming up this weekend. Next week, we got Truth, Red, Right, and Black, The Mania of WrestleMania 2, Wrath of Man, the Superblog Team-Up, which Chris will tell you more about in just a second. We have two entries into the Superblog Team-Up this year because The Doctor is in. So on Long Road to Ruin, we're doing Dr. Doolittle, the two Eddie Murphy movies. And then on The Metal Hammer of Doom, we are doing Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue. In addition to that, we got a review coming for Weezer Van Weezer, and finally, a review of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Season 1. All right, go ahead and do your plugs and get out of here.
All right, I'm going to hit you up with one giant plug for Superblog Team Up. If you do not know what that is, hit hashtag Superblog Team Up or hashtag SBTU to find out all the history of Superblog Team Up. We're a collection of like-minded bloggers get together on a unified topic, and we're going to talk about this time round, the Doctor is in. We're covering all doctors from all ends of the pop culture spectrum. As Mark said, you can expect Dr. Doolittle right on to Dr. Bong. That's right, I said Dr. Bong. And I'm covering Dr. David Banner. And if you know your Hulk history, you know what that's about to talk. Yeah, we're talking 70s Hulk TV series. So there you go. That's Superblog Team Up. That's coming up on May 12th. Don't you dare miss it.
All right, thanks for joining us here on TV Party Tonight. He's Chris Bailey. I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.